So we may bring you live coverage of the execution in Huntsville. Nuestra Palabra may be heard on an HD radio or by going to kpft.org and clicking on HD2. Christopher Young is a prisoner in Texas. If the state has its way, he'll be dead within the hour. This is Execution Watch. Huntsville, Texas, death penalty capital of the Western world, where prison staff is preparing to put Young to death by injecting him with a deliberate drug overdose. During the next hour, KPFT's Execution Watch will broadcast live coverage of the killing in Texas, the state responsible for more than a third of all U.S. executions. Execution Watch host Ray Hill with criminal defense attorneys Mike Gillespie, Jack Lee, and Paige Yannick. Huntsville reporter outside the death house, Joseph Clark. The Execution Watch for Christopher Young begins.
And good evening. It is July 17th, 2018, and Texas is scheduled an execution tonight, and thus the Execution Watch show preempts the regular programming on KPFT to bring you special coverage of executions. That is, seriously enough, I was able to run into one of my very favorite activists of the whole city. I ran into Tony Diaz outside. He's in studio right adjacent to me. That is the HD, one or two. Is it HD2 studio? It's the HD2 studio. And he's over there, doing, Nuestra Palabra. That program has, done a remarkable job. they've got a program where they take basically lowriders, and they fill the trunks full of books, and they go wherever there are schools that are denying people to get Mexican-American studies, and they open up the trunk of those books. The program is called Libera Traficante.
I'm good with that. I really like
book trafficking.
Book trafficking.
I really, really like that.
Those are real activists. We've already got a call from Huntsville. Let's see what's going on. Put them on, Elizabeth. Hello.
Hello.
What's going up, Jason?
Joseph.
Okay.
No, the witnesses just crossed the road right now.
We were expecting a little slow thing because it just hit the Supreme Court and they're already exercising the witnesses. They must know what the Supreme Court's going to do before they do it. But you have also posted that the Execution Watch Prison Show volunteers in Huntsville are being broadcast live on what? The Prison Show Facebook page?
Yes, sir, that's correct. We're on the prison, we're live on prison, on Facebook right now through the prison show.
How do people find that?
Oh, you go onto Facebook and you type into your search engine, the prison show, and you click on our link and you'll see the live stream feed. Should be the first news feed on our page.
And you will be there for the duration of, tonight's activities.
Yes, sir.
And so let me tell the people who are listening to us via broadcast, if you're listening to this show on KPFT, your FM radio is not interfered with the Facebook feed. If you go to Facebook, you will be able to hear this show on the KPFT archive in a couple of hours after we broadcast it. But we're going to go in depth to the show as we always do. Technology moves on, and Joseph is an activist with the prison show, and he is helping facilitate all of this. How many demonstrators have you got?
Right now, we got about 30 of us out here. We got a lady all the way from Switzerland out here protesting with us. We got people all around Texas. We got their normal professors up here from Sam Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we got some other people from the prison show out here. And we got Miss Glory out here with a bullhorn.
Yeah, I can hear her in the background.
Everybody know how we feel and where we're standing with the death penalty. So, yeah, we're all out here just showing our support no matter how hot it is.
Would you explain to the listeners what it means when you say the witnesses cross the road?
That means that the offender's already on the
gurney.
On the gurney in the process.
And he's got the needle in his arms.
Yeah.
And so they're bringing in the witnesses to watch him being killed.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Joseph. Appreciate the report. If anything happens, call Elizabeth or the station and let us know.
Okay, I will.
I appreciate it. And that was Joseph Clark, volunteer on the prison show. Well, tonight, let me do this. Tonight, the lead attorney on this case is Jack Lee. Jack, what happened in this case?
Well, as far as the crime's concerned, I suppose it's not one of the ugliest that we've ever seen, but it's just the circumstances before and after, I think, really suggests to us that he's not he wasn't a good guy, and I think it's really the punishment phase that really got him .
Was there any question raised during guilt or innocence?
There were some objections as to a video, and I'll get into that a little later, but let me just run through the facts.
Okay, sure.
So Young commits this murder. He had actually knocked on one of his neighbor's doors. He lived in a house, and next door was an apartment complex. He knocks on one of the doors in the apartment complex, and a woman opens up. He puts a gun to her head, Miss Edwards' head. She's in an efficiency apartment with three young daughters, and puts a gun to her head and says, "Give me the money." She is scared. She reaches in, pulls out $28 and says, "That's all I have." And he proceeds to tell her, "Well, since that's all you've got, you're going to have to give me something else." And proceeds to force her to perform oral sex on him. Afterwards, he says, "All right, well, we're going to go take a ride." Gets her to get into the driver's seat of her car, a red Mazda Protege, with W being the first letter of the license plate. That will become important later. And gets in, and before they leave when they get to the front of the apartment complex, he says, "I want to drive." And he gets out of the passenger seat and tells her to get climb into the passenger seat. Well, the passenger door was left open, so she makes a break for it and escapes. He then drives Miss Edwards' car a few blocks over and goes to a convenience store that also had a laundromat in it, or rather a dry cleaner in it. And he walks in and brandishing the silver pistol, goes to the owner and says,
"It was a 45.
Oh yeah, it was a 45 pistol,
big one.
Yeah. 45.
Big pistol.
It wasn't subtle.
No,
it was a 45.
Oh yeah,
45 doesn't talk; she screams.
No. So, anyways, shows up with a pistol and says, "Hey, give me the money." There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of panicking, and he gets impatient and says, "Give me the money. I'm not beeping kidding." And anyways, Mr. Patel, the victim, is shot once, and after being shot once, he tries to run away, hits an alarm, and is then shot again. So at that point, he leaves. Young leaves, takes the car, finds a prostitute,
spends
the money that he got, and does some drugs. What drugs? I don't know. But he does some drugs, and so he is at his house a little while, he wasn't at his house, but the car was seen by a patrolman a little while later, and they knock on the door, and he's belligerent, and so they arrest him, and afterwards they find his clothes. And on his socks there was a splattering of blood of the victim. Now the car was identified. Not only was there a video of him at the convenience store dry cleaner that showed somebody wearing a black shirt and white shorts, same color clothing that was described by two witnesses who had walked out of the, who were actually regular customers of the convenience store and laundromat, dry cleaner. Well, and they both described Young in what he was wearing, and they also positively identified him, afterwards. One of the other witnesses actually saw him get into the, red Mazda Protege and described the car having the license plate with the letter W. So it's fairly.
So you've got two robberies,
right?
You've got a rape scene,
correct?
You've got a homicide,
correct?
That's capital qualification,
sure.
Times three,
sure.
And all of this occurred between 8:45
and 11,
and 11 a.m. when the defendant was captured by the police.
2 hours.
So because of the speed of the arrest and
sure.
Identifying marks, there's not a lot to do in guilt or innocence.
There really wasn't. Defense objected to the video, saying that it wasn't clear because the audio wasn't good. Except that
did that work?
Nope, did not work at all. The objection.
Okay.
Was,
what about punishment? Who's going to take punishment? You going to do punishment?
I can.
What's there?
Well, what we have is a boy.
This is Mike Gillespie.
Yeah, this is Michael.
Michael take anything. He practices law in Channel View.
Well, what we have is a scenario where...
Let's make this interesting. I'll do punishment with Mike.
Okay.
And I'll help out.
We've got a trio.
We're going to triple team.
And here's my problem. This one day was a horrible day. He did so many things that, you know, if you want to say he deserves the death penalty, he didn't have raped a woman once. He raped her twice in front of his
That's
kids,
correct.
Okay? Then he killed
he
this guy.
He raped her twice in front of her three little girls who were all under the age of eight.
Okay.
Okay.
He also took three...
Janik, give the prosecutor a break.
He also took three shots at the guy at the store. One, two, three, so we knew what he was doing. And then, after having sex twice on the rape situation, he steals the money and goes hires a prostitute for more sex. All by 11 o'clock.
Well, there are not a lot of drugs out there that you can be on and perform like that.
Well, I heard crack. He also talked about
MDMA
the night before, smoking pot and drinking alcohol. But let's talk before that day, because let's talk before that bad day of his life. He got the death penalty because of future dangerousness.
Okay.
The truth be
everybody gets the death penalty.
Because of future dangerousness. The future dangerousness, I believe, was what happened that day.
Yeah.
What happened before his life. It doesn't sound that bad.
Of course, in Candyman, the Texas court said the crime itself can be so horrible that...
Because this person, Candyman, he not only cold-blooded killed his kids, he killed other kids and able to cover it up. The cold-bloodedness is what the court says makes it that future dangerousness. What he did that day would equal future dangerousness. But I want to talk about before that day. He had a criminal record, but he evaded arrest in a stolen car. He had a fight with his girlfriend. That doesn't sound like a death penalty prior.
Well, if I was a girlfriend, get pretty serious sometimes.
Well, he beat a 8-month pregnant girlfriend, but
all
again,
right. See, this is
also
it.
This is also
he beat her while he beat her while she was 8 months pregnant to the point where she, in order to get him to stop, she said, "I'm going into labor."
Okay, it's not good, but we're talking about him being executed.
Okay.
Okay, all I'm saying to you, these acts are just basic criminal acts.
I got you. Let me talk to the audience here for a while.
Not all of the cases we get are pretty.
That's true.
We get some pretty ugly cases. But you got to realize, Elizabeth and I have been doing this show for 10 years. I think July the 10th, 10 years ago, was our first show. And it was just a little radio show. We didn't have a legal committee. We just got on and talked about the case, and I had to do all that. Well, actually, Elizabeth did all that research and gave me the notes, and I was performance staff, and we did it. And in all of that time, 10 years, I can only think of three occasions where Texas actually killed the person that did the crime. By that I mean we certainly have, everybody's not innocent, although I have friends that think everybody on death row is innocent, and I just don't agree with them. But everybody, by the time they get charged and go through trials and wind up on death row, are frequently so profoundly changed by that experience that we wound up executing not the person that did it, but the person that was the person we executed. The person we execute, and I think this is an outstanding example. I think that what we've got here in Christopher is you got somebody who got on death row and became everybody's friend. He helped other people who were struggling with their ability to read and write. He got busy trying to help other inmates with their depression and their handling. And he was basically a Mary Worth in the cell block. Whatever you needed, Christopher was there to help you, a fellow on the cell block. So we are literally not executing the person that did those horrible things. They may be the same person, but they are not that person now. And in the 10 years that I have done this show, I made a list. Lurch would have committed the crimes he committed for which he was executed if the circumstances allowed him to do that on the day he was executed. He just simply, and I knew Lurch on the streets, and not that well.
And
fortunately,
you're alive.
Fortunately, we did not do any dope business together, because that's who he wound up killing, is a woman and a man in a dope deal.
He thought
he was being cheated. And I still am cautious when I pass Jacinto City, because that's where all of that happened with Lurch. But Lurch, and you can go to the website and find him. He kind of looks the part. The interview, he blasts this show and prison show. He was the same guy that did the crime many years before. And
he resembled the character on the Addams Family,
right? And Sales, Tommy Sales. Do you know that Tommy Sales is the most often reviewed interview on our website? And Tommy Sales came. I went and interviewed him. He's in there. You can listen to him. And if you do that, understand that Tommy would have done that crime as easily on the day he was executed as he did on the day he actually did it that wound him up on death row. And, of course, bless his heart, I've got a lot of sympathy for Freeman. Freeman was the kid that killed the game warden in some little East Texas town.
Yes, we had him about 9 or 10 months ago. Yes.
And, yeah, and I interviewed him, and he used the entire interview to explain why it was right for him to do that. And I think we wound up finding his father actually guilty of a bad job of raising him so that he thought that way.
Mm-hmm.
But Freeman would have committed the crime for which he was executed on the day he was executed as readily as he did it all those years before. But other than that, well, there's been a few crazies that have been so far off that I don't know how to categorize them. The guy that shot his kids with his wife on the telephone in Dallas. And
yeah, that was ugly.
And blamed First Baptist Church for
it. Yeah, there is really no way to
how do you sort that out?
There is no way to discover the impetus for that offense.
Yeah, and after we got through with that interview, I kept saying, well, you're going to have to get another date because this is not an interview I want to broadcast. But he didn't let us come back and re-interview him. Other than that, everybody we have killed in the state of Texas during the lifetime of this show has not been the people that actually did the crime.
Ray,
yeah,
I think I've often said, I remember kicking this idea around with Jim, that TDCJ is really a place to house the young and stupid.
Sure.
So that they get a few years behind them, so they're no longer young and hopefully not stupid.
Well, actually, they built a Jack Kyle, a friend of mine who worked for TDCJ for many, many years and ultimately became director of prisons, and then he was a Democrat with a target on his back and a Republican governor, so he didn't last long. But Jack built a unit called the Ferguson. And the Ferguson, not Ferguson, Jack built a unit called the Ferguson.
Right.
And he went into this woods with a bunch of young, energetic inmates.
Mm-hmm.
Cleared the woods.
Sure.
Everybody lived in tents with fences around them.
Because they could.
And mm-hmm. That's why the prisoners built the cages that kept them in those days.
You know, it's what.
And he burned up all of that energy building a prison to keep on burning up. On the Ferguson, you did not walk to chow. You marched, rapid march to the chow hall. He burned energy up from the break of dawn until the end of the day, and then you went and slept without air conditioning in 120 degrees weather. You were not ready to be rebellious.
So it was kind of like A&M took over the prison system at the Ferguson unit?
Well, kind of. But I went up to interview Jack as he was petering out as the chair of the prison system.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew he was
a dead duck.
Yeah, he was getting discharged, and I knew that. And so, what do you talk about in a case like that? And I brought up the Ferguson. His whole complexion changed, just absolutely changed immediately.
He took joy.
He was proud of your idea.
Yeah,
he made that work.
Look, we can actually send 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old
to Buddhist
boys
monasteries.
To war.
Yeah.
You get a 30, 31, 32-year-old man, and you give him a gun and say, go to war, they look at you funny and go, why? Why would I want to do that?
Oh, really?
18, 19-year-old, let's do this, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's because, you know, for lack of better words, the prefrontal cortex hasn't developed yet.
You're right. Well, what do we do about that? Do we change? Now, I don't know. How old was this guy when the crime was committed?
He was 21.
He was 21.
Okay. He was 21.
So he was not fully developed.
Oh, of course not.
No.
No.
But, you know, how in the world do you justify changing the age of responsibility to meet with the prefrontal cortex?
Well,
and then saying, oh, by the way, you can't even be an adult until you can think like one.
Well,
and from my perspective and my experience, I mean, most men are not adults until about 35.
You're being much
Yeah, yeah, right. But yeah, I think she's being a little generous there.
Part of it here. Part of this.
I don't want to have a conversation with anybody under 60. What the hell are you talking about?
Part of it here is that we, you know, as a society, we keep trying to insulate people from the responsibility of their actions. Oh, you're 15. You're not responsible yet. You're 14. You know.
Okay.
Let me flesh this out.
Go ahead and finish that.
Let me flesh this out. There was a time when I was growing up where you didn't get money for chores. You got to eat for chores.
Oh.
You. I started cleaning rooms in hotels when I was 8.
Okay.
Which, frankly, that since it was the family business, there was an expectation of I was going to do it.
Yes.
Now it's a violation of child labor laws.
Of course.
And you know, it's the fewer responsibilities we give children, the more I think we coddle them. I have a friend who has kids ages 3, 5, and 6. They are held responsible for the things that they do. And they're told, if you do this and you break it, you're going to be responsible
for
it.
Well, they're telling Latin American kids that's separating from their mothers, if you cry, we'll give you to mean Christian foster parents and they'll raise you as slaves.
What?
It's the immigration policy.
Oh.
Yeah. But, you know, at any...
It's not my phone. It's everybody's phone.
No, my phone is on silence. Thank you.
But at any rate, you know, it's back to TDCJ.
Sure.
You know, to a certain extent, TDCJ is a place where we house mostly young men until they are no longer young and can actually, you know, and
function as men.
Isn't that what the military was supposed to be?
Supposed to be. Communism is supposed to work.
Oh, well.
The tools you have to work with in criminal justice are classification.
Sure.
And levels of security.
Let me talk a bit about punishment. Okay,
yeah.
A second.
Yes, do that.
A couple things that I want to talk about. First of all, this kid's background. By all account, he was a decent kid. He played chess. He played cello. He was close with his father until his father was a victim of a robbery. Seemed like a Martin Luther King day. Father took him and his sister to the celebrations, took them home, and went back to celebrations and got killed in a robbery. It affected him dramatically. It affected him.
How old was he when
he was 8 years old.
He was 8.
Okay.
To the time he was an adult, he'd go to the cemetery and cry over his dad. What I see, and I'm not saying it makes any difference, but where was the counseling? These are people who are poor people who don't have any counseling. If you have money, you get grief counseling. If you have no money, you have grief. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is not to feel sorry for him, but what I find interesting is he claims the reason all these things happened was because his father got killed in a robbery, and his mother ended up marrying a stepfather that abused and raped his sister.
That was abusive to him, yes.
Beat his mother, raped his sister, and then the sister got raped. This is why he was so angry.
It's an accumulation of that.
Okay. We have just spent millions of dollars on defense firms for this guy in order to get his issues in court. My question to you is we do understand that when he was a child and his father was killed, there probably wasn't counseling available. But in this day and age, I'm kind of curious. He robbed somebody.
Janik's about to go crazy, but settle down because I want a part of this.
He robbed somebody. He raped kids in front of... I mean, are these kids being counseled for what he did to them growing up? Are they going to
go
up and be killers also?
No, actually, if you want there to be change with the positive, there's a whole bunch of the society you've got to do something on. I have a famous speech that I gave in Bexar County. Bexar County is San Antonio, Texas, for those of you who didn't know.
And I where this crime happened.
Where this crime happened. And actually, they have pretty good social services in Bexar County.
They really do.
But the thing about it is, to get social services in Bexar County or anywhere else, you have to be proactive. You have to seek a counselor that cares about you and let them run the hoops. Because if you walk in the door of a social service agency in Bexar County and say, look, I'm worried about my level of anger, you're not going to be able to see anybody. Somebody else has got to triage that, diagnose it, and then kick it out. Now, Janet, what have you been so nervous about over there?
Well, it's not nerve so much as an expressive response. He was 21 in 2005.
When he did the crime.
It is not that he was reared in such a circumscribed condition that sex roles were intentionally inflicted.
When was the last time you priced a cello?
Baby, the last time I priced a cello was when I was a senior in high school. I played the cello from fourth grade until I went to college.
And the high school got you a cello.
No, the high school didn't get me a cello.
Really?
My daddy bought me a cello, and my daddy bought me a cello simply because I took care of my baby sister and kept her out of my mother's hair.
Okay, but
so,
his daddy was murdered when he was 8. So that's so much for the cello. But the thing about it is, he had some potential. It was not noticed. It was not triaged. He had problems. Those were not triaged.
But I was reared in the 60s and 70s.
Hello.
And he was reared in the 2000s.
Where you're not allowed to beat your child.
I was spanked regularly and often.
Oh, yeah.
I was raised in the 50s, and I didn't get any of that crap.
And look what happened to you.
Yeah, I went to prison for 160 years. But I was a very well-behaved prisoner.
But my question is, in today's, I know that he was, but these kids... In the year 2000, I'm curious, what has society done to help these kids not have the same troubles that
You're
he
right.
had? And I'm just curious, all the money we spend on his defense lawyers, I wonder how much the government has spent to help these kids who saw their mother be raped and saw people being killed. What has society done to prevent these children from becoming
Fortunately,
like him?
Fortunately, tax dollars are fungible.
Michael, let me attack the premise that something can be done.
I'm not sure I agree with you about that, but at least try.
Let me throw something out that I think might suggest that it's, for lack of better words, random luck. Look at the people who are suggesting that Young not be executed. His aunt. Okay, we expect that.
No, there's a whole bunch of people out there who are young.
The victim's son has come out and said,
yes.
Don't execute him. This is not what my father said.
He has changed his life.
A tradition.
Right.
The son has comes from a tradition of Indian culture, and forgiveness is a big part of that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's... and he specifically, the younger Patel, specifically said... If we don't execute him, this will break the cycle. And what a remarkable thing to say! What a remarkable thing for the son of the victim to say!
It's It is remarkable.
Sure.
And the way the cycle can
Hindu?
Be...
Hindu, yes.
Hindu?
Yeah, Hindu.
Hindu, yeah.
The way the cycle can be broken, and this may sound kind of silly, but to me, sometimes people in the penitentiary who have lived this life become your best parole officers, probation officers, counselors to help young kids in the same trouble.
Well, and the other thing is my late and good friend, Bo Lozoff, created a Hindu program for going into prison. He renamed it Zen.
Mm-hmm.
Because it dealt with a lot of meditation, but it was Hindu traditions. And they used it in North Carolina when they were in a progressive phase, and they used it in Tennessee when they were in a progressive phase. And it literally changed the life perspective of some pretty violent people and some pretty ugly people inside prison. So the Eastern thought that Mr. Patel brings to the table has been tried in Texas prisons and was found not so much in Texas, but although I learned Zen when I was in prison.
Well, you know, the theory that life is on a wheel.
Sure.
And that the end of something is the beginning of yet something else. And it continues.
Well, for instance, alternative religious beliefs. The best behaved people in prison are black Muslims. That's literally true. They obey every rule. If they break the rule, then they got to go back cell block and deal with their brothers.
Well, and, you know, Catholic schoolgirls can be very, very well behaved in front of the sisters as well.
Yeah, and that's why they got red knuckles.
Yes.
Yeah, I know about the knuckles. But the deal is that in institutional environments. Now, how do they do after they get out? Well, you know, I'm a big student of Malcolm X. I quote Martin Luther King a lot, but I memorized every speech that Malcolm X ever gave, because I figured out that Malcolm X had figured out. And while I'm talking to, listen, I'm going to be up on the road tomorrow. I'm going to be visiting an inmate who's scheduled for an execution, and I'm going up there with a camera crew, and we're going to be on the Polunsky.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to know that people on the Polunsky are pretty impetuous listeners of this show.
Hello.
Yeah. Glad to have you out there. We need your feedback. We need notes from you about what you think about how we are doing. Now, tonight, we have wandered pretty far
afield.
Afield. And that's because we, number one, didn't have an interview. If we had an interview, we wouldn't have the luxury of this time.
So let's talk about luxuries. Let's talk about another world. Let's talk about assuming he has changed his ways and assuming that this was a bad day and assuming that he should not be executed. Are we at the point to saying that this is somebody who should be spared execution and given life in prison?
Well, let me tell you something. I have a friend that's happened to. And I'm sure Thomas Miller-El is listening wherever he is. Thomas Miller-El was sentenced to death row. There's not a real credible claim for his innocence, but he was such a nice guy that they commuted his sentence to life in prison, and I just wrote a letter from him. Thomas, I got a feedback from the parole board that they had received my letter and added it to your
Michael,
file.
Michael, here's the issue that I think we fundamentally have. Yes, it is accurate, as Ray said, that the people that we execute have changed, and it's growth. Does that mean that we can absolve them for the responsibility of the mistakes that they have and the crimes that they committed in their youth? And what I've noticed is a pattern in the people that we execute. We execute people who either show a pattern of violence, or we execute people who commit crimes that are so awful, they are so repugnant,
horrendous,
that our sense of balance in the world says we have
and
to.
And we execute people who are accused of such crimes that maybe didn't do it.
Sure.
I do not believe that Robert Pruitt, there's not enough evidence to convince me that Robert Pruitt is guilty.
But what I'm driving at, Michael, here is that in the case of Young, if he had not committed the rape before the murder, if he had not gone out and.
The rapes
before the murder. If he had not afterwards just kind of casually pick up a prostitute and do drugs, all within the 2 hour and 15 minute time span, all right, I'm not sure if he would have been found. If they would have gone after the
death penalty. I think you're right, and that's exactly what the appellate court said on the issue of future dangerousness. Mm-hmm. The acts for those 2 hours was so bad, there was no hope, and I understand that law. But let's, for a second, let's talk about not the past, because future dangerousness is the future. And that's what Ray is saying. If you take a person who had a really, really bad day after a bad life, is there a chance, and by the way, we're not even talking about should you be punished, because that's another issue. But we're talking about...
Well, the Supreme Court took care of a lot of that whenever they said we can't execute anybody that committed their crime before the age of 18.
Michael, you know that this is...
And some pretty bad dudes were transferred into general population.
As a result.
As a result of that. But guess what? Most of them are doing well.
Thank God.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that we spend a whole lot of money on the appeal process to test the execution statutes, and we use a lot of these cases as test cases for lawyers to make the points. That's
and
what we do
in these very serious cases affects the rest of the law. The phone's flashing, Bob.
What's
See
that?
If that's word from Austin. I mean, from Huntsville. Okay.
Oh, okay. One wishes that it might be word from Austin, like,
yeah,
you know.
Well, it's too late for word from Austin.
I would like to remind
the listeners that this process began on time at 6 o'clock. It is now 6:42. That's a long time. But here, Elizabeth's checking. Yeah.
Hi, Ray. I just got a call from Joseph, and he says the witnesses are crossing back to the hospitality house.
That means
so,
the process
Mr. Young
is completed.
Has been, executed.
Christopher Young is now dead at the hands of the state of Texas. His death certificate will read homicide, like any other murder. And his body will be transported from the death chamber in Huntsville to a small church provided gratis by the contractor who is Starnes Funeral Services down in South Houston, Texas. And he will be on display there for his family and friends to feel warmth in his body
and
before that goes away.
I understand his family was up in the studio last night.
Kind of interesting.
Early.
Yeah.
Actually, this morning.
They could be sitting in these same chairs in the same studio that we're in right now.
Well, the KPFT is, what we do here has been affected by the programming on The Prison Show and the programming on Execution Watch.
Michael.
But let me do one thing. I'm still talking to the audience here, Jack. Folks, I appreciate you free world people listening to our show. Yes, we disagree about things, and we let that be known. I hope everybody is free to speak their piece in this studio, because it's kind of my job to allow that to happen. Once in a while, Jack and I'll get kind of close together, and I'll try to keep him from going somewhere where I know he's going, but I don't think I've actually shut him up. And God, I miss Jim. I miss the sage. And so what we try to do here is we try to give you some insight into a part of your world that nobody is exposing but us. We spend an hour here every time they kill somebody.
Tonight, they read all these briefs. I'm sitting here looking at stacks of paper. I think Yannick wins. Jack Mike follows, Jack brought his computer, so he don't need paper. But the deal is, we keep an archive of this, and this show will be posted to Execution Watch. Now, I will get 4 calls from England and 3 from Switzerland before it actually gets on the air. And we're able to do all of this because the playground in which we do it was actually something that me and 3 other people conceptualized in 1968. That's well before I went to prison. Me, Larry Lee, former editor of the Daily Texan at the University of Texas.
I remember, yeah.
I remember that publication.
Yeah, well, I think it still exists.
Yeah, I got to interview with the Daily Cougar next week about things, Montrose and Pacifica. And Larry had a terrible crush on Don Gardner, but that didn't work out. And Deborah Denberg, who later would become our state representative. The 4 of us got together and said, you know, we need a radio station where people can freely discuss controversial ideas. And we started off that way. In less than a year, we were bombed into silence by the Ku Klux Klan. They didn't think that was such a good idea. And so we rebuilt and got promptly bombed again. And then KPFT in Houston was the most famous radio station in the world. We're the only station in this country that had been bombed into silence twice. That happens in other countries, but it don't happen here. And the guy that bombed it, a fellow by the name of Lewis Beam. Hi, Lewis. He listens to my show regularly. Did a little federal time, so he knows where he counts. Was busted in a West Texas, New Mexican desert with the stuff to blow up KPFK in Los Angeles in the front seat of his car with an inspired inspection sticker. Now, that's smart. Right?
Did anyone in Los Angeles thank you?
Everybody in Los Angeles thanks. Well, the KPFK is on top of Mount Wilson. You can drive to it.
Right there at the Wilson Observatory.
Yeah, you can drive to the Wilson Observatory, get out and walk over to the transmitter and pack the dynamite around it. It's true. It's very vulnerable. And but, no, it wasn't me that caught him. It was that it was that inspired inspection sticker. That got him.
Well, you know.
Oh, okay. And so why am I telling you all of this? Is because we are replacing a very successful program on KPFD who's on the HD channels raising money for Nuestra Palabra. And I have no doubt that Tony is raising his part of the money to support KPFD. Well, we too need to do that. Now, I know you're from all over the world, and you listen to this show almost recreationally, but even recreation deserves to be compensated for. So go to the website. And it says donate. Open that and put down Execution Watch and contribute to KPFD. It's tax deductible in this country if that is important to you. And that website is kpft.org.
Pretty please with sugar on top.
Yeah, well, and the telephone number is 713-526-5738 is the pledge number if you want to call in a pledge. Feel free to do that. You're not going to interfere with Nuestra Palabra when you call in. Just simply tell the person that answers the phone, I'm contributing for Execution Watch. do it. Makes my life a lot simpler.
Please.
Yeah. Jack? You want to wrap up?
I forgot where I was now.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and sub in.
Paige hasn't said nothing yet.
Let me go ahead and sub in. There were two issues that were really, really concerning to the Federal District Court. And one of them was relating to the incomplete jury instructions in mm-hmm. the actual trial. And the other dealt with the lawyer's supposed ineffective assistance. And that had to do with the jury issue as well, kind of
sure,
subterranean.
Let me explain to these folks that at the end of a trial, a judge comes up with a document that is written by the lawyers in the case.
Okay. We have a charge. A charge is a bunch of pieces of paper that talk about how someone might be found guilty and then how someone might be punished. In Texas, we have a two-stage trial, guilt, and then we have punishment. Guilt, innocence, and then punishment. So we have two different charges. And invariably, in capital cases, the charge does not revolve around guilt or innocence. The issue in a charge, whenever it's disputed, will involve punishment. What happened in the punishment hearing, which caused this case to go awry for a defendant?
And bottom line, it poses several questions. The nature of the crime, continuing dangerousness, and factors that might have affected the way the jury looked at it.
Yes, might have made it less severe. Mitigation factors.
Mitigation factors. And those questions are proposed to the jury, and the jury gets to decide that. The judge doesn't.
Well,
in Texas.
Of course. In Texas, yes. The jury decides everything.
And when the jury decides it, it's final. In some states, the judge can intervene on some of those issues.
But this is not one of those states.
It's not one of those states. Juries have the power, so it's important who sits in the jury booth.
And that is why we tell you not to evade jury service, please.
Yeah, I know people who do damn near anything to keep them going to the jury.
I know.
Now, because of my criminal record, there's not a prosecutor in Harris County that's going to let me make it through to the panel.
And because we three are all criminal defense lawyers,
you ain't going
there's not a prosecutor who will let us sit on a jury either.
Now, I've got friends who teach sociology and other sciences at Rice University, and they get to be four persons.
Oh, I know, because they're educated. We're not. We're just lawyers.
Well, I am sorry that Christopher Young is dead. He seemed to have some last-minute hope, but it didn't work. And San Antonio has sent one successfully to death chamber, and he died. This is Execution Watch for Tuesday, July 17th. 2018. It's coming up on 7 o'clock. We have done our duty. You're welcome to get in touch with us. My email address, personal email address, is hillray, H-I-L-L-R-A-Y, at sbcglobal.net. I am open to read your emails and take them under consideration, and I won't argue with you. If I don't like what you say, I just won't respond. That's the way that works. But I will pass on your concerns to the other members of the staff. I am one of the co-founders of the show. Elizabeth Stein, our producer, is the other co-founder. And we're rather pleased.
this child and what it has become. Although we don't approach these shows with a great deal of glee.
No.
We think there's a journalistic responsibility, and we are pleased that we're able to fulfill it. Tonight's lawyers, Jack Lee was the lead lawyer in tonight's case, Paige Yannick. Michael Gillespie was here. The voice of God took a day off.
Indeed. And we miss Larry.
Larry, if you're listening, we love you. Get better and bring yourself back, because your voice adds so much to the show.
Thank goodness he has a long time to recuperate. We don't have another broadcast scheduled for a while.
Our reporter outside of the death house in Huntsville was Joseph Clark, who is also the sponsor of the Facebook page broadcast of our volunteers up there. Thank you, Joseph, for doing that. The next scheduled execution is September the 12th, when they expect to kill Ruben Gutierrez. If he does not get a stay, we will be here to do that show. Elizabeth Stein is our producer, and she makes it all happen. Our technical director is Otis McClay, and he tends our website and keeps it up there. The engineer for tonight's show was Bob Gardner. Thank you, Bob. The music you hear in the background is written by Victoria Panetti. And you can reach Victoria by going to She Monster International on MySpace. She Monster International. And her brother sits on death row with severe mental handicaps, waiting his turn to be executed, which of course will be reported on Execution Watch at radio station KPFT, Houston.
Some accused are innocent. Some get good lawyers. Most don't. State of Texas, killing machine.
Don't you know they're killing people? 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 Don't you know they're killing people?
Jesus' name.